Hey everyone, Cynthia Dearon here. Welcome to this episode of the Business Beyond Borders podcast, where we unlock the secrets of international business success. I wanted to let you know that throughout March, I'm going to be interviewing some inspiring women who've successfully expanded their companies internationally. And I'm doing it to tie in with the Girls Going Global campaign, which my company, Dearon & Associates, is running to inspire, encourage, and empower women to go global. You might be wondering, what is this Girls Going Global campaign that you're talking about and why are you doing it? So let me start with a little bit about the why. I've been running my own business for a number of years and I've been working internationally in the business space for around the last 19 years. And during that time, I've noticed that although women are starting businesses at historic rates, there are still relatively few of them in the international business space. And what that means is that there are few women who actually take that next step to scale up their business globally. And I think that that is a little bit strange and also a little bit wrong, because we know that women are just as capable at doing business as men are. Here's the thing. I believe that women face a number of challenges when it comes to actually going into that international space. Now, these include things like access to finance, limited access to structured information and methodologies which will help them get into the international space, family commitments which make their life very, very busy and make it difficult for them to juggle a domestic operation and an international operation, and very little specialized mentoring for women, and possibly less support from family, friends, and peers than men undertaking the same thing are likely to have. I believe that all those factors contribute to really bring down the number of women in that international space. I don't think that's right, and so I want to do something to change it. And as a result of this desire to kind of move the conversation forward, my team and I have created something called the Girls Going Global campaign. And with this campaign, what we're going to do is we're going to conduct a worldwide search and we're going to award one female entrepreneur, one female business owner, a 12-month scholarship to our International Business Accelerator program to give her all the tools that she needs to launch her business on the global stage. We're also going to give a few other cool prizes as well. And so that gives you a bit of context about why I'm interviewing women this month. If you'd like to check out the campaign, please go to internationalbusinessaccelerator.com/girls-going-global. And if you want to check out the accelerator, just go to internationalbusinessaccelerator.com. Now let me tell you a bit about today's guest, Sheba Nankiolia. Sheba is Indian by birth, but she moved to Australia around 17 years ago and she started her own multicultural consulting company, MultiConnections, which she's grown into an international business. Sheba's also the national chair of the Australia India Business Council. So this is a lady with some real experience, some real insight, some real expertise, and some real clout. I found the conversation with Sheba absolutely fascinating and really uplifting as well. And I think that's because Sheba is very open. She's very willing to share. She's extremely optimistic and she really has a positive outlook on life. So I think everybody's going to love this show, but I think it'll particularly appeal to you if you're a woman in business. And if you're a migrant woman who's moved from one country to another and is facing all the complexity that that brings, you're going to love this show because it's a great example of how you can move from one place to another, totally transplant your life, start over, and still make a huge success of it. Enjoy. Sheba, welcome to the Business Beyond Borders podcast.
Thank you, Cynthia. I'm really pleased to be here today.
I wanted to start with a question about India and India's economy because that's where you're from. And as you know, the Indian economy's gone through a bit of a rough patch over the last 18 months with the introduction of GST and with demonetization. But as you look at the press today, the predictions are that the economy is going to grow 7% this quarter. My question for you is that really realistic against the background of what we've seen over this last 18-month period?
Thanks, Cynthia. I think that's a great question to start the interview with, because I truly believe that India is turning around. Yes, the 7% is going to be achievable. Everything that we see is very much set to a pattern, which is all about progress. When we look at the World Bank rankings, already India has come up, even within this short span of 1 year, despite the demonetization and the GST, as people feel that it's something that's actually pulled India back. But I really do believe that it's actually put India in a great roadmap to move forward, especially with international business, because look at demonetization, you know, it was all about corruption and so on and so forth. How do we really get rid of all those middlemen and make it a lot more simpler economy? And that's what demonetization is trying to do. Mm-hmm. Looking at GST, complexities of taxes, oh, it's very hard to go to India. There are 201 taxes. Guess what? Now with GST, it's going to become a lot more simpler mm-hmm. for people to do business in India. And of course, there's going to be teething problems when you implement something as radical as these, you know, new initiatives that have been introduced. But then from all practical, you know, perspective, we find that there's actually progress happening. Look at the World Bank rankings. The World Bank rankings show that within a span of 12 months, India has gone up 30 spots in the rank for doing business, ease of doing business.
What do you think is driving that?
I would say definitely a couple of things. Number one, a great prime minister and his vision, which is very, very progressive and forward-looking. And the vision is not just about policy and making it, keeping it up there with just the officials, but it's a vision that goes beyond and very inclusive. Mm-hmm. It actually touches the grassroots. So, you know, there's a grassroots engagement happening with the farmers, with sections of society that politicians would never have thought about, excepting for their vote banks.
Yes.
But here's somebody who's desperately looking at how do we involve people who are going to make the difference in years to come. Mm-hmm. For example, youth. He's really reached out to youth, young students. So it's just amazing. Now, you'll ask me, can you give me an example? Yes, I can give you an example. For example, a lot of poor people never had a bank account. Why? Because the banks would not allow them to open an account without certain, you know, some certain terms and conditions, let's put it that way. And here's a prime minister's gone out and really ensured that the banks are open to opening up accounts for poor people. And the poor people and the farmers have actually shown their faith and come ahead and opened accounts and deposited money. So there's some huge, advantages and progress that's happening in the economy. I see it definitely going beyond 7%, if you ask me.
Yes. And we're going to be talking quite a bit today about women in business.
Yep.
And that's one of the key reasons that I've got you on the show today. While we're on the topic of the Prime Minister and the Indian economy, can you just tell us a little bit about what the Prime Minister's done in that space of women and women's empowerment?
Sure. And I assume you're talking about the Indian Prime Minister?
Yes.
Yeah. So the Indian Prime Minister has actually got a very strong agenda when it comes to women, and that's women's empowerment. And there have been several initiatives which have been implemented mm-hmm. and across various industry sector and verticals where it touches the lives of women, whether be it banking, the financial services, the micro financing, health, education, it has gone over and beyond. And, that is one of the really strong milestones he believes, which is going to turn around the country and, basically lead the country to further progress. Yeah.
I think he's probably right, because, you know, as we know, where you educate women and empower them, they then transfer that to their families.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, from AIBC end, I can tell you, we have a couple of members who are actually there in India who have set up businesses, who have set up businesses which are actually encompassing women.
Yes.
And, and women from villages. So they're getting skilled, they're getting trained, not just in terms of the technical skill, but also it's a social entrepreneurship where they are being shown how to become more independent, how to save, how to use their own money and have more control over their money. So some great stuff is happening, and I can tell you Australia is involved with it too through AIBC and our members.
That is really great to hear. I am very excited to talk to you today about your personal journey to become an international businesswoman. And I think it would be great to start with some context. So can you tell me about what your growing up was like, where you grew up, and how that kind of set the scene for what came later?
Sure. I actually grew up in India. And when you say India, it had been very traditional values where family mattered, respect mattered. But also with my parents, they were very, very particular about the fact that they did not spoil us too much and wanted us to really grow up very independently, valuing everything that we received. We did not come from a poor family. We were well off. But yet we were given things very sparingly to make us understand the value of material objects and so on. So I would say, for example, I'll give you a small example. Every time I would be, we would be getting some toys, our parents would make sure that within, say, span of 2 weeks, we would be presenting those toys to some less fortunate children.
Wow.
And they would make us do it. And our hearts would break and, they would say, no, you've finished. 2 weeks is enough for you to play with that toy. Now I want you to hand it over to somebody who is less fortunate than you, who cannot afford it.
And what impact do you think that had on you as a child?
I think compassion, empathy, also realizing that it's not just about you, and also realizing that there's a lot more to life than just material acquisition.
Yeah,
I would definitely say.
And what did your parents want for you when you grew up, do you think? I mean, if they had thought about where you would be in life now when you were a small girl, would they have thought that you would be doing what you're doing?
I don't think they would have thought that I would be where I am. I think, nor did I think I would be where I am. I'm really extremely appreciative of all the opportunities that have come my way and for me to have gone around and actually explored and made use of them. Mm-hmm. But I think they did want me to become somebody who's fairly independent. In India, the tendency was in those days to get married and then depend more on the husband.
Yes.
But right from day one, my dad and mom made it very clear that we want you to be educated. So they did not spare any amount on education, and to ensure that you should be in a position where you're always able to economically be independent.
So tell me a bit about your education. Where did you go to school? What was it like? Did you enjoy it?
It's very interesting. And then again, this is my dad was in a transferable job. He was with the government. And we were transferred to so many different places, states. And rather than staying in one school, he preferred to take us around with him,
yes.
My mom and dad. So I studied in fact, 9 schools.
Wow.
And a lot of people ask, what did it mean? Actually, what it meant was huge amount of flexibility and adaptability which built into the personality.
Yes.
And I think one of the reasons why I'm very flexible, open, adaptable to new circumstances, new technology, new ways of doing things is a lot to do with my growing up years, really.
Yes.
So that's I think played a huge key role in when I grew up. From school, I went into a college called Loreto College. And in school, I would say I have mainly studied in Catholic schools, which is very unusual for being a Hindu person.
Yes.
But my dad was very progressive. Yes, we are Hindus, but very progressive, very inclusive about all religions, including Christianity. And I studied in Catholic schools. I have a lot of those values in me still. I really appreciate it. And when I got the opportunity for my son, when we came here, I actually put him in a Catholic school, though he actually passed exams for a selective school.
That's really interesting, and that probably says something about the impact that experience had on you. So you didn't really do the traditional thing, did you? You didn't, just go to school and then get married and have a family and settle down. Tell me a bit about what happened after Loreto College.
Yes, I didn't do the traditional thing at all. And I know that a lot of my relatives felt pretty, they were pretty shocked when I said that I was going to go in for my MBA. And they said, who will be, how is she going to get married? And, I know there were quiet Chinese whispers going around that nobody will be marrying her because she'll get too educated. But my dad and mom stood their ground and made sure that no, if she wants to do her education, if she wants to complete her business studies, she will. And I finished my MBA. After my MBA, I actually did start off in a company called Clarion McCann.
Yes.
It's a fairly large advertising agency, one of the largest in India, and had some great opportunities. So that's where my education took me, and my parents were pretty much in one mind that I should carry on with my professional education.
Now, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to ask this, but I think it's relevant because it's part of your entire story.
Yeah.
How did you find somebody who was willing to marry a girl with an MBA, despite what everybody said?
That's a good question. I found him in my MBA institute. Right. And both of us studied together. But having said that, we really did not consider getting together at that time. It was much later when I started working. The only thing that my parents asked me was that if you do want to get married to somebody on your own, considering that at that time in India, arranged marriages were very much the, you know,
the norm.
Order of the day. So they did tell me that we want you to complete your education. We want you to work for a year or two so that you know exactly what you know your mind.
Yes.
And then you can take any decision. And they backed me. They knew that whatever decision I would take would be the right one.
That's pretty fantastic, isn't it? I mean, yeah. They sound like very, you know, sensible and progressive parents.
They are.
So we're recording this interview in Australia today, not in India.
That's right.
And I would love to know, how did you manage to make the jump from living in India, growing up there, doing an MBA there, completing all your education and, you know, meeting your husband to be there, to suddenly finding yourself on the other side of the world?
That's a really good question. I actually was one of those few people who never, ever wanted to migrate. In fact, I am still passionate about India, my country of origin. I am so blessed that I am with the Business Council, and even my work keeps taking me and keeps me connected with the country. But it was really my husband's decision, and he was at that time working with Disney, and he was doing some Disney joint ventures. He had come to Australia. He loved the country. He loved the lifestyle, and he came back and he said he'd like to apply for a permanent residency. In fact, he got the residency within 15 days, I was not very much for it. But I think, again, I would like to say that the reason I decided to go ahead was coming back to an insight which is very typically South Asian, and with, in fact, a lot of other multicultural audiences would also do that. They do something which is right for the family.
Yes.
And my husband felt that it was the right decision for the family. We had a young child too. There would be, you know, great opportunities here. Though my son was going to one of the best schools in Delhi. But I thought, okay, it was just the right decision for the family and decided to migrate here.
So what was that experience of moving here with a young family away from all your support networks and that very traditional family structure where there are always people around, to living in Australia where sometimes you don't even know your neighbors very well and the nuclear family is a unit? What was that experience of living between
two cultures
like?
Actually, it was not too bad for me because I had my brother at that time here.
Yes.
So at least we had some contact with somebody there. I had one or two other friends from my university and from my early advertising days, which is also pretty good. But having said that, yes, you are at the, very much starting life all over again. There's no help. You're right. There's no help around. And my son, though he was not very young at that time, but still not old enough to be, you know, there are some stringent rules that up till a certain age, you cannot let a child on his own.
Yes.
In the house. So I used to actually get back from work as soon as his and my work, my work guys were really good. They allowed me to, that flexibility to pick him up, bring him back to office. He would be with my with me in office until again I went back home. So it was tough days, but I think all in all, I had a great office. I had a great boss.
Yes.
Who gave me a great break, the chairman and CEO of the company. And I reckon Australia as a country is a friendly country, and our neighbors came around, and generally it was a very, very nice experience of settling down here.
So how did you restart your career, as it were, when you came here? What did you actually do when you moved?
Okay, it's really interesting because I really never had to apply for a job, because when I finished my MBA, I got an offer from Clarion McCann, and I was pretty much with them and the Interpublic Group for a long while. I had never ever done a CV in my life. So when I came in here, I thought that I'll just call up two or three companies and establish contact and maybe ask them that I'll come around and see them in the next few weeks. And during that period, I'll sit down and do a CV.
Yes.
So I contacted the first company, and it was quite interesting. Contrary to a lot of experiences that migrants have, I asked to speak to the CEO, and the person who picked up was actually the CEO. Right. And I did not believe it was him. And I kept telling him, no, please pass me on to the CEO. And he said, oh, well, it's me. If you don't want to talk to me, that's fine. I'm leaving the phone. And I said, oh, no, I do. I want to come and see you. He said, sure. Within an hour? I said, within an hour? He said, well, I'm off to the US. If you want to see me, it's within an hour. Otherwise, next 3 weeks, I'm not here.
Gosh.
And I said, oh my gosh, I don't have a CV. He said, well, it's up to you if you want to come and see me. So I actually scrambled and managed to get there on time without a CV. And all he asked me is, don't worry about your CV. Just tell me in one sentence, how would you define yourself? How would you describe yourself? I said, that's something that I can tell you very quickly. He said, what is it? He said, somebody who can make the best of any bad bargain given to her. And that was it. He told me, you're in. You can start from tomorrow.
And what did you do?
Literally. So it has been, it was a really good, interview. Hardly an interview, a chat. Got my job, got started. Yes, it wasn't the position that I had. I used to be the director, All India, of the company I was in, looking at a lot of international projects. But here, I started much lower. But it didn't take me long. It took me within a minute to accept it, because I think that's another thing a migrant has to realize, that, you know, grab any opportunity that you get. Don't be fussy. Because if you're good, talent will shine through. And that's what happened in my case. Because in less than, I think, 6 months, he told me, take over as a general manager of the company. And within less than 3 years, I was the CEO of the company.
Wow, that's super impressive.
So I've had a really good experience here.
So you did this stint in the corporate world in India and then in Australia. And then in 2006, you set up MGG with McCann World Group. And then that later became the company that you now own and run, MultiConnections. What was the catalyst for going out on your own, and how did that happen?
It's quite interesting because, number one, I was almost 7 years in this company, or 6.5 years. And I used to also have a lot of my clients often ask me that, Shiva, you're very entrepreneurial, because I move fast, I think fast, I implement fast, because an idea is just an idea unless you implement it, you know, the best of ideas. So I did find sometimes the systems would be a little bit slower here, but I would move pretty quickly. And I think the clients saw the way I operated, and they said, Shiva, have you ever thought of starting something on your own? And I think a lot of the catalyst actually happened from my client's end, who made me think that maybe I can do it, and I did it.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, and I can tell you one thing, Cynthia. Some of those clients are still with me. I can say one of the clients who was my first client in Australia was Telstra, and they still continue to be with me.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about what MultiConnections does, because a lot of people won't really understand what it is when I say MultiConnections. So just unpack that a bit for me.
Sure. So MultiConnections is a really, it's an integrated marketing and an advertising agency. It's very much what a lot of other advertising companies do, but it's a lot of companies combined into one. For example, in a mainstream context, you have a PR company, a digital company, a social media company, a creative company. So think of all those companies rolled into one. That's an integrated advertising advertising and marketing
yes.
company that we have. So we offer strategy and research solutions, digital solutions, social media solutions, above-the-line advertising, PR and experiential programs. But the only difference really is that we tend to just focus on multicultural audiences. So that's the only difference, that it's really the focus is on multicultural audiences. Sometimes we do mainstream too. For example, there could be a client where they find that majority of their target audience is multicultural and a few mainstream audiences, then we might do the whole bit.
Yes.
So it's really an integrated marketing and advertising company.
And you work for clients in Australia, but there are also clients in other markets who you work for, is that right?
Absolutely. So one of the reasons why you said... you asked me that what is the catalyst for me to move from MMG McCann to multi-connections. Now, one of which was, of course, the clients which got me started. But why did I move from MMG to McCann? Transition really happened when I realized that as a company, we were very globally global-minded.
Yes.
We realized that, you know, targeting audiences in an isolated manner in Australia is not good enough, multicultural audiences, because they have huge links to their countries of origin. So I was always wanting to promote diaspora marketing, which
yes.
means the influences of these audiences are huge even in the country of origin as well as here. So there's an offshore marketing concept and an onshore marketing concept. Now, a lot of mainstream agencies did not understand that, which is one of the reasons why I thought it's really important for us to just go totally 100% independent and
yes.
really focus on what our core vision is, which is really working not just onshore but also offshore. So that's how the global and the international bit came in.
And how did you go about actually creating that international clientele? I mean, was that all linked to the fact that you already had an established network and a base in India, or was it something entirely separate from that?
I would say there are two things. Number one, yes, there was a base in India, but I think it went beyond that, because my stint, even when I was in India, took me to Europe, took me to Berlin, Frankfurt, took me to US, UK, Asia, Singapore, China. I've traveled a lot, and a lot of my projects were international. And when you move around, you find that really seriously, cultural influences play such a strong role in kind of impacting your marketing and business objectives. If you're not careful about, for example, you know, I was also handling Coca-Cola at one point of time.
Yes.
And as an international brand person. And then I realized that, you know, you can't just roll out the same brand with a one-fit strategy for all markets. But how you don't change the brand. You don't really play around with the brand. But what you do is connect it through through insights which matter to these audiences. It could be cultural insights, it could be something else, but whatever it is.
Yeah.
So the love for cultural and cultural marketing and the love for understanding that every market is so distinctly different
yes.
and that you need to really fine-tune your thinking mm-hmm. and strategies to be effective in that market is what led me to start looking at internationalization and building on those relationships that already existed, because I was already moving around in these markets.
So did people come to you, or did you pick up the phone and say, hey, we've started our own company and we'd like to do some work with you even though you're in another country?
I would say a lot of people have been contacting me directly. I have been singularly lucky where people have asked me that, you know, how do you advertise yourself and how do you get business? But everything has been word of mouth.
That's amazing.
And I strongly believe that if you are true to the product and service that you're offering and you're true to your clients and customers, they will come back to you over and over again, but not merely come back to you. They'll talk about you to their friends and business associates. And that's how the business has grown.
Yeah. I was reading some press about you before we got together to chat. And I noticed that last year in the press, you made a statement that multicultural was the new digital. And I thought that was fascinating. And I wondered if you could explain that for me.
Sure. I think the reason why I said that was, when you look at Australia is a hugely multicultural country today. You know, it's just unbelievable the way the numbers and stats have changed. I'll give you a small example. For example, if you look at Australia, 1 in 5 speak a language other than English.
Yes.
If you look at New South Wales, it's 1 in 4. If you look at Sydney alone, census, the latest census says 1 in 2.
Wow.
That is huge. Now, the problem what happens is a lot of traditional marketers don't want to adopt what they see coming up as a future trend.
Yeah.
This is exactly what happened with digital. When digital came, everybody wanted to back away. Oh, you know, automation is going to take away my job. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. So digital was the black sheep.
Yes.
I would say multicultural audiences, a lot of the marketers do not realize that they can make so much more in terms of their revenue and market share if they started targeting them in a more niche manner. And that is the reason why I say multicultural marketing is just like digital. It has all the potential to make you grow, and it is the future, but yet people quite haven't got it.
I think that's a really, really interesting point, and it definitely resonates with some of the experiences that I have as I look around the market.
Yeah.
I just want to go in a slightly different direction for a moment, because as well as running multi-connections, you somehow also managed to devote a lot of your time to being the chair of the Australia-India Business Council, which is a pretty big ask. How did you get to have that role? Because I think that you might actually be the first female chair that the council's ever had. And what's it like? What does it involve?
Thank you. It involves a lot. Yes, you're right. I am the first chairperson in the 32 years that the AIBC has been in existence. It was actually started about 32 years ago when the then first Indian Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi, who visited Australia, and Bob Hawke from the Prime Minister of Australia, they realized there was a gap. There was no particular council or organization in a bipartisan manner that could be looking after the trade between the two countries. Yes. And that's how AIBC was formed. So our role is primarily facilitating bilateral trade and investment between the two countries. We work with the Government of India, Government of Australia, industry leaders in both countries. How did I get involved? I was singularly lucky because when I came in here, I looked around and I saw a lot of community associations, but I saw the only one business council. Mm. And I thought, okay, I'm actually very business focused myself. I'm in a business which is very much which is across borders. And I believe that this is something that I can definitely contribute to as a member. And I always think of it not in the way that what can the, you know, there's a famous saying, what can the country, it's not about what can the country do for you, but what can you do for the country. And that's exactly the mindset I had, that how can I contribute to AIBC? I became a member as soon as I came into this country, and that's years and years ago. It's now 17 years plus.
Wow.
17 years I've been a member. Interestingly, I was nominated first into the New South Wales chapter because it's a very, very, very strong body with chapters in every state. Each state has their own management committee members. So that's how I got nominated first into the management committee, then got elected into becoming the vice president, then of New South Wales, then the president of New South Wales, went on to become the national vice chair. And they're all elected positions where the members elect you. And finally, the chair. I would say that I really worked my way up, and it's hard work. So it wasn't that I got into the council and expected to just get in there and get myself elected. No, that's not the way. You contribute, you build, and then if members think you're worth it, they nominate you and you then go ahead.
And I'm also interested in, and this is a kind of a segue into a conversation about being a woman in the international business space. So do you think that being a woman has had any particular impact on the international expansion of multi-connections and, you know, your rise to become the national chair of AIBC? I think what I'm asking you here is, do you think it would have been easier for you if you'd been a man?
Yes, definitely. Without a doubt, I can tell you. Because as a woman, you need to work harder. And, you know, much as people may say that, yes, women's empowerment is here to stay, yes, we're still striving, we're still trying hard. And it is for us women who manage to get into certain positions then to start mentoring and really, you know, putting your hand out to get more and more people up there along with you. It is hard, but you have to remain very focused. There are several people who will always try to point out that your point of view is not the right one. If you believe it's the right one, and if you think it's the right one, you have to stand your ground, and at times, you know, just forget that you're a woman. But, you know, you are in a man's world, and sometimes, I'm not saying you have to behave like a man. I never behave like a man. I think a woman has innate understanding of situations, innate sensitivities about situations. They are very good at relationships. And I think, you know, you have to be tough as a man. Let me put it this way. You have to be as focused as men are, because they can be very focused, singularly focused. But you also need to combine it with some of the innate qualities that women have. They are culturally sensitive. They are intuitively sensitive. They have very good relationship skills. And, you know, combine the two, and then you have a winner situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is true. You've successfully grown MultiConnections over the last 12 years or so. I was wondering whether you could actually share with us some of the habits that you have followed that have helped you to create that success. So maybe there's something that you do each day or a pattern that you follow. Okay. Tell us a little bit about what a typical day in the life of Sheba looks like.
Okay, let me start with a typical day. A typical day in my life is I do tend to get up very early. I'm a very early person. So it could be anywhere between 4:30 a.m. to 5 a.m.
Oh, it's early.
Yeah, it is. When I get up, there's something that not many people know, but the first thing I do is meditation. And that's a good 10-minute meditation. And people will ask how, when, what. This was years ago. My dad and mom took me for a transcendental meditation, me and my sister and brother. And that really appealed to me. And as I say, you know, those habits are always formed early in life. So I believe that every time I start the day with meditation, I remain very focused, very calm, and on top of everything and in control. So that's how I start my day, the 10 to 15 minutes meditation. Then I actually take a few of my emails so that there's not too much of a log by the time I reach office. I am quite a social person, so I'm quite active on social media. So I love to catch up on social media, what is happening, the news, what is happening, maybe do a couple of posts in terms of what I'd love to share. Moving on, I get ready. I do a very quick, I try to do some exercise, and it's a very quick one, but anyway, I try. Thereafter, I leave for office. When you look at what is it that really makes my life and makes me who I am? Definitely very passionate about what I do, because that's how we hire people. If you're not passionate about what you, it's not a job. If you're passionate, you will go over and beyond. You will constantly want to learn. You will constantly want to stay ahead. You will track trends as never before. You'll never be happy with what you have. So it's really important to be passionate so that you can give that 110%. It is very important to be focused, because there'll be hundreds of things happening in your life. And especially people like us, as also yourself, we sit in so many different boards. There are priorities. How do you juggle and ensure on that particular day you make sure that you're focused to the priorities that you have for the day? And there'll be always several priorities juggling. So focus is the next thing. Third, I believe, is positivity. I'm a very positive person. And, you know, I have no time for negative people who are whinging, cringing, complaining, because it just shows that you are really not taking onus and you're not being accountable for your decisions. You're trying to palm off the blame to somebody else. Somebody who's accountable will never be sitting and complaining. They will try to find a solution. So I try to surround myself with positive people, and even in our office, we always ensure that we have a team which is very, very positive, because positivity breeds positivity. Negativity breeds all kind of wrong, you know, issues in life. I would say passion, positivity, focus, these are the three things. And finally, I would like to come, which I believe is really important, which is relationships. I think respect and relationship is so important for us, whether an intern or a senior person provides an brainstorming idea is equally welcome. We do not believe in hierarchy. And, you know, yes, hierarchy exists, I always say, for accountability, but not for anything else.
Yes.
And we have a flat structure where we really believe that relationships really matter and respect matter.
I love it. We were talking a little about this before we came on air, and I think I know what you're going to say in answer to this question, but are there any particular books that you would recommend to women who are thinking about expanding their business internationally?
To be very frank, Cynthia, I know there are lots of books out there. And really, seriously, I read them too. But if you were to ask me what helped me, and that's what I would like to share, I think nothing beats experience than a book.
Yes.
I would ask people, get out there. I have been going out for, you know, very often you feel, oh, do I really need to go to that meeting? Do I really need to go for that session, business networking event that I've been called for? You never know whom you connect with, whom you meet, who can be a great mentor, who can share experiences that can completely transform your life. It's happened with me. So I would say getting out there, meeting as many people, networking, meeting inspirational business leaders as well as women leaders, both. And more importantly, I think going for some of these programs, like I recently attended one of yours, Cynthia, which was, I think, the International Business Accelerator.
Yes.
So I know I couldn't complete it, but I was so keen to see what it was like. I think I was there for about 90% of the time. But what I came back with was amazing, because these are the kind of programs that absolutely, you can see yourself breathing and living what you're going to be doing.
Yes.
Because there are actual true experiences that, you know, facilitators are sharing with you, and it becomes real. It's not something unreal or unreachable. I'll read it, I'll put it away, and then I'll think about how I'm going. But this is too real. This is too practical. Guess what? Even I can do it. Guess what? I can reach out and ask him or her if I had any clarifications. So I would say, I wouldn't recommend any books. Of course, I would always say read as much as you can. I love reading. So my end of the day ends with reading.
Yes.
So a lot of people are on their phones, but I actually love to read. And my husband gets really annoyed because I have these piles and piles of books lying next to my bedroom side table. But I love reading. And I would say all these programs such as yours and so many others who offer programs which are international business programs.
So really talking about learning by doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You have done some amazing things already, Sheba. What is next for you?
What is next for me? Okay. So, yes, I am very lucky. When I came in, that's why I say focus, because there are three things I wanted to do when I came into this country. Firstly, I realized I was a migrant, and a migrant has to work a little bit harder, naturally. And guess what? It's not because there's racism in this country. No, not at all. I am the one person that will always say loud and clear that Australia is a very fair go country. It is a country which really respects talent and capability. So it's not about whom you know, but what you deliver. So that has worked well. So I would say that, one thing I realized that as a migrant, I wanted to establish myself in the industry that I was in, which was advertising.
Yes.
And secondly, I wanted to keep in touch with my country of origin and see how I could contribute. Mm-hmm. Those were two huge motivators for me. Very often my son and my husband too often tells me, oh my God, you spend so much time in AIBC, surely you can spend some time on yourself and you'll be happier. But, you know, it energizes me because it's a country of origin, I'm giving back.
Yes.
So I think what, as you said, if you ask me about achievements, when I came into this country, I wanted to make sure that I would be able to contribute to both these two industries, and I've done. So I was very fortunate, and today I sit on actually the Peak Advertising Association board here in Australia, which is headquartered in New York, actually, as well as chair the AIBC. So both of them have given me a lot of satisfaction that what I set out as an objective for myself, I have been able to achieve. I didn't know that I would be a chair one day. I just wanted to contribute to AIBC, but it happened along the way, so it's fantastic. Again, the same thing. I didn't know I was going to be sitting on the board of the Peak Advertising Association body today, and probably as one of the migrant women too, and the only migrant woman, but it's happened along the way. And I think if you are true to what you set out to do, everything falls into place. Now, what next? I have recently just started another company, which is a joint venture with WeChat agency, and who are a business partner of Tencent Holding. And with the WeChat agency, we are going to be looking at doing a lot of WeChat marketing for not just corporate clients, but also now we're going to move into the SME segment, realizing a lot of them have, it's almost like, how do we help a company who has a budget on a shoestring and really make them, because a lot of companies, startups, they don't have large budgets and yet they want to go to China, they want to enter. How do we then? So while we have the India side really wrapped up well, along with some of the other countries we are doing, like Indonesia, Vietnam, Philippines, and so on, Malaysia. But this WeChat JV, I think, is going to be a big one for a lot of SME clients. And I'm really looking forward to getting this happening.
I think that is such important work, because I see so much potential in that micro to medium space, and I really look forward to hearing how that goes. So I'm going to be checking back in with you about that. I've got just a couple more questions.
Sure.
The second last question I've got for you is, how can people get in touch with you if they are inspired by what they hear on our interview today and they'd like to know more about you or they'd like to get in contact? Where do they find you?
So they could quite easily find me through my company details. And if you Google, Multi-Connections will come up, which is, I think the website is www.multiconnections.com.au. And also, you know, through you.
Yes.
So, you know, they can contact you and you can put me in touch. And definitely I've got my Facebook, rather than the Facebook, I would say a LinkedIn account, which is good for professional associations and relationships, my Twitter account, which is called Shiba Tweets. And Shiba Nankular is my Facebook account. So it's quite easy to.
So you're out there in the
I'm very strong on social media.
Shiba, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today, and I've just been fascinated by some of the insights that you've shared. I was wondering whether you had any final words for people listening to the show, particularly women who are thinking about expanding their business beyond the borders of their own country, and even more particularly for migrant women who are in their second country rather than their country of origin and who are thinking also about expanding a business offshore.
Cynthia, I think that's really a question which is very much a favorite question of mine, I would say, because at the end of the day, I think women, sometimes I always say women hold themselves back, and it is not people who hold you back. Why? Because a lot of us lack that confidence, and from an early age, you know, you see the boys have been given a lot of additional opportunities, additional appreciation as you go. And obviously they have that extra sense of confidence, which you don't normally see in women. And I always tell women that, confidence is really important. Number one, believe in yourself and do not allow anybody else to take away that belief. So first of all, the belief in yourself. Number two, to realize that today, you know, you can reach out to so many different contacts that you have across the globe, as well as here in Australia, women's organizations, women in business. Like, for example, when I'm at AIBC, I actually founded the Women in Business chapter for AIBC, where women can get together. You know, they could bounce off ideas with each other. We reach out to women in India, in China, a lot of other places. So, there are a lot of opportunities today. Why? Because I'm going to come back to the the fact that it's a digital world. You know, can you imagine in the old days we used to go to the libraries to do our research when we were students. Today, a tap of a button and you have the whole world in front of you. So I would tell women that today you have the best possible opportunities. Don't hold yourself back, just go. And even if you're a migrant woman, consider it to be actually a huge advantage because you're bringing a rich fusion of two cultures. For example, let me take myself. My culture, it's all about respect for the family, the South Asian culture. It's about really adhering to what your parents want, and happily so. I don't do it just because they tell me to, because I believe in it. It's about really the guru culture too, you know. And they're not very confrontative, the Indians. They are more collaborative. And then you come to Australia and you see the tremendous sense of hard work, respect for any kind of work. And it's amazing, you know, the work culture here, the business ethics here. So, you know, if you combine the two and the respect they have for each other, so I think we are in such a great place, a migrant woman. Number one, you have your women's sensitivities and the innate sense of relationships and how to do things. Number two, as a migrant, you have the best of two cultures. Then how can you not succeed? That's what I say.
I think that's a great note to end on, Chiba. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Hey everyone, if you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, you might want to check out the International Business Accelerator, which is something I created to help micro to medium-sized businesses to speed up and de-risk the process of internationalization. The International Business Accelerator, or as we like to call it, the IBA, is a program built on the three principles of skills and knowledge, mentoring and accountability, and community. I built it especially for founders and CEOs who want to take their business to the next level and are wondering where to start. The program is structured in a way that's simple to follow. It's digital, so you can take part from anywhere in the world. It's a lot of fun and our members love it. So if that's you, if you're thinking about going global, check it out at internationalbusinessaccelerator.com.